Yo, this is Euler. Check out my episode on Classic Burners. So today we have the privilege of having one of my friends and one of the guys who is a bombing legend in Los Angeles. Euler One, representing LOD, OTR, and COI. Thank you for coming by, and it's a pleasure having you.
Hey, privilege is mine.
So we'll get right into this. Basically, let's get back to the origins, to the beginnings of how you started, how you found out about Graf, where you were at, your area. Let's cover the basic stuff like that.
Okay. I guess as you put it, you see me as coming out of the SGV. I'll take that. I was more or less in Alhambra, you know, with the family's house right there. I guess I could start maybe at 88. Started as seeing that there was a game out there that was graffiti. I don't think I knew at first that I'd ever be a part of it. And there was some good graffiti coming off the 10 freeway that really was what started my interest. You know, some of the people, Cab and Angst and some of the stuff the SDKs were doing, Mural.
Was it Freeway Bombers out then?
It was FBs. You know, even I think Sir that you had on the other week, him and Wisk had a couple of things out there. That was just really impressive, you know, at the time. You know, I guess I always had an eye for, you know, those type of high spots. But it was an interesting time at the late 80s in the San Gabriel Valley. Seemed that the original writers that were out there that were noticeable, the scene that I had just missed, you know, people like Pryor and Nicer and crews like BKR, that was pretty much just ending when I was starting. So for the couple like transition years of 88, 89, that's when you're figuring out what a name is, what your name's going to be. You know, I had a few little beginner names like most people do. I think originally it wasn't even a name. Like, I just wrote some initials that were like some random nickname I had playing basketball. Mm-hmm. And then realized you got to pick a name, you know, so I picked one, not knowing that there was. I'll just go back and say this. I was saying that I missed the scene pretty much, you know, the people and crews I mentioned, the San Gabriel Valley, because in like 86, 87, 88, there was a nice strong scene out there. The buses were getting mobbed. A lot of tags, you know, writers that kind of were like legendary later, you know.
Can you name a few of the crews and important writers of that era?
Yeah, I think it was KRH, SKA, SDK, BKR. UTI made it out there on some buses, you know. But right about the time I was getting into the scene, a lot of those original people, gangbanging started becoming trendy. So, and it was happening where I was at too. You know, the football team all turned into the local neighborhoods. You know, and I was on the football team and was trying to figure out, do I go with them to the neighborhood? And I kind of did that for a little while until I saw my first murder, you know, and it was actually twin brothers, you know, and one brother was with us. He lost his life. He was shot in the head. And I remember going, running up to him where with like 15 other guys, and it was just this puddle of blood just going like this. And that was about the time that I was having to choose, like, pursue, you know, that future, hanging out with the neighborhoods, or go into graffiti, you know, which seemed like a better avenue. And that's when I started paying attention, like, you know, to what graffiti was developing there, and trying to search it out for myself, because there were no mentors, you know. I didn't have anybody that like, oh, my friends are doing it, I'm going to go do it. You know, I pursued it as something I wanted to do and found the friends, you know.
What kind of music were you listening to back then?
Yeah, everything, you know. That's an important thing in life to be well-rounded in music. It just gives you so much. Yeah. You know, I mean, everything, everything like Zeppelin's and Pink Floyd's and whatever was the rock of the 80s and all the hip hop since it started, you know, everything, house music, you know, oldies, you know.
We were mentioning that in the SGV and some areas down that way, there was a lot of a big scene of like the party crews and that sort of thing. So that, what did you ever?
Yeah, we did that too.
Backyard boogies and all that stuff.
That's let's see, how does it develop? Your skateboard and biking. Next thing you know, you're going out to those backyard boogies. And then it's the clubs and then the raves and festivals and, you know, and like I said, music all on concerts and everything along the way, you know. Those were just all phases, you know, and then and it ended up with like another phase of graffiti as a hobby.
Yeah. All right, so why don't we let's transition back into the buses, because that's where you started making an impact. And I saw your first name, Fleece, that you were writing, F-L-E-E-S. And I noticed, first of all, you had a cool hand style. And then...
okay.
I thought it was cool because it was original. It was just different.
We'll call it original, that's right.
It was original, but it was well done. I mean, the letters were very... It was a very straight... You had like a lot of real strong straight lines. You were up. And then... I would see you up a lot with like Mean Streaks and Pentels, like white markers on the windows. And then I saw you get big scribes, and you pretty much in the era you came out with, I would say you were like the king of the 70s, 71s, the buses that went towards El Monte bus station. Like that's you had right. All those scribed up.
Get Up Stickers is the ultimate bombing sticker made from military grade materials. These stickers are super easy to peel and were made for putting on tanks. So you know they're going to last. So click on the link below to submit your designs. You don't want to sleep on this.
So let's talk about what the bus riding scene was in the El Monte area, San Gabriel area, and about scribing and some of the experiences you had with that.
Well, I agree. You know, like that was... the El Monte bus area had all those lines. I never was able to be a part of the scene of that. You know, that's what I was saying. I'd missed that. There was a good El Monte bus scene, you know, with the crews and, you know, people that I mentioned. But I was never a part of. There was no bus bench. I'd heard that the El Monte station had once been, you know, kicking. But by 1990, I never seen any actual writer's bench out there. You know, the first writer's bench I ever saw was in Hollywood and Vermont that I ever attended, you know, 7th and Broadway. But I pretty much missed the whole scene out there. So that's why I think I had such a desire to find a scene, which is I was doing everything I could to get to Los Angeles and figure out where I fit in. You know, as soon as I found out what a bus pass was, I made my fake one and I was off and running, you know. So any weekend you'd see me busing from down Valley Boulevard to downtown. And once I discovered Belmont, that was it. You know, I was I don't want nothing to do with San Gabriel Valley. You know, the only reason I was up out there at all was as a transit point, you know. But yeah, it was fun. Yeah, the buses out there, you know, for that period, people don't realize now how big, you know, the bus bombing was to the graffiti scene. You know, I don't know how you considered yourself an all-around writer if you had the opportunity but didn't bomb buses. You know, people would probably tell me, well, you know, I had a car. Well, I had a car too, but, you know, when needed to, you know, I used to go into the bus yards, and I don't know how many other people did that. I'd heard of a few, but you know, that was, I thought that was taking it another another notch up there.
Yep, absolutely.
You know.
All right. Any experiences you remember? Memories of getting like chased when you're doing scribes or
Bus memories.
The tools that you use, because yours came out really legible. What were you using to scribe that?
I was a little prima donna. I liked the regular general scriber, you know, little flip tips. You know, if you could have one, that's your favorite thing. Arrowheads, you know, do faster, bigger things. I used to like the red volcanic rocks that you'd find at gas station bus stops and things, just for doing like big outside scribes, or when the big, you know, that sandpaper, you know. Yeah, the scribes are fun. It's just, you know, you get the same buses so often, you know. So one of the things I started doing was, instead of putting years, you know, next to your scribes, I'd put the months and years to differentiate all the different times I've been on the bus with different scribes. You know, I never really saw other people doing that much. I just like to, you know that one spot on the top of a bus window where there's one name you could just do big on the top of the window?
Yeah.
And that was kind of showed you, like, in the older buses, the 86, 87 buses, like, who was around first?
Yeah.
I used to like to do the, get that spot, but on every window, back to front, and then front to back on the whole bus.
Yeah.
You know, fun things, we're like on bus battles, you know, doing silly things like with a spray can. Like, I like doing oil throw-ups from the back all the way to the front on the floor. You know, I thought that was creative. Inside back grills. You ever been on a bus with somebody and they're one of those obnoxiously loud scribers, and they'll be like, and you're just like looking at the bus driver, you know, and you have like an hour to go till you get off to your stop, and it's a once an hour bus running in the middle of the night, like 4 a.m, and someone's back there. You never had one of those?
Well,
I wasn't doing that kind of shit.
When I was scribing and doing all that, I just ran with, it would be just me and Snap, or just me. So I controlled, you know, things until I wanted it to happen. You know, usually I'd hit it right before I left.
Well,
I kind of chill, wait. And, you know, right before my stop, I'd get up, bap, 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 hit. All I needed to do back then, I felt, was, because I was the first guy in the southeast side, like on the 60s and 61s that ran down.
That 60 was a beautiful line.
It was called the Bread Box. It was a square bus, RTD. And it had the most awesome scribable windows, bro. They were huge. First big spot. So I'd get like the first two on this side. The one that's in the back, and then the one that I sometimes could get, that one that was over there, but I'd get those three, boom, 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 across the top.
Nice.
And those ran for like maybe 2 or 3 years, but then, because after that, it got crazy. Everyone started scribing, and eventually, since mine were the old and large ones, all the little scribes eventually started eating them up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You could still see it there somewhere, you know what I mean? But you just, there was all kinds of little stuff around it, and sandpaper later on. I mean, eventually got covered through the...
Hey, did you have that vibe where, like, since they had buses, you'd see this nice scribes from like 85, 86, 87, like just running, and it was like 89, 90, 91, and you kind of felt like the scribes that you'd gotten at that time would be there forever. You know, because like, oh, it's a permanent.
Yeah.
Remember when we used that word, permanent?
Yeah, yeah.
That sure got phased out, huh?
But the longest, we're so cool. And these are the dudes that really like got the most mileage, was that little white panel in the back. You know that?
Oh, yeah. That was the one that was the roll call of everybody.
Yeah, where you scribe, and then they take,
I get
the
all
thumb,
happy seeing a minor 86,
dirt,
you know?
Rub it in so you can see it like dark.
Oh, of course, man. Remember since it was fiberglass, it would give you like that splinters?
Yeah.
So you'd be feeling that scribe for days.
Yeah, dudes have little gloves or brownie gloves.
Man, for my scribing finger, it used to be deformed practically. It was such a big callus, you know, on my fucking scribing finger. You know, that did put a little mileage on those scribers.
Yeah, but those things ran forever, man. Like those things, until those buses got put out of service, you could still read like 87, see Maine and Deco, Orion.
Deku Recon. Was one that made it to the San Gabriel Valley.
Recon, Jin, Whisk, all of them. You'd see scribes from all kinds of dudes.
I used to see a UTI guy, Sorcery.
Yeah,
Sorcery. Spelled out the whole thing.
He had
a really nice scribe
style. He was up a lot. There was a lot of dudes. All right, so any just chase adventures or anything that where you got sweated on when you were bus mobbing?
I'll talk about one bus adventure where I was with Ware, and we were involved in some battles, so we were doing some like obnoxiously silly shit, you know, inside the bus, and the bus driver really wasn't having it, you know, so he made some threats and pulled the bus over and didn't want to let us out, and you know, I pulled a knife on the poor guy, and what makes the story funny was he pulled out a bigger one, and we ended up having to like jump out the back windows, you know. So props to the RTD guy, you know.
That's right.
For saving his bus, you know. Well, but that was an interesting one. Yeah.
Can't hate on him for that.
Nah.
Okay, so now let's see. You take that name Fleece, put in a lot of work on it.
You know what's funny? Like people ask me why I changed it.
Yeah, that's
like
that's,
like some people were saying that it looks similar to Sleaze, you know, and I didn't see it, and funny thing, Sleaze didn't see it, you know. I actually had that name when he put me in RTDK, you know, and but I was like, okay, the name didn't mean much or anything, so I figured I really wanted a three-letter name, you know. I got to a point where like, let me have something I could do super fast, and you know, that's when I came up with Oil Stuck.
Where'd you come up with that? From the Houston Oilers?
Just, I wanted a three-letter name. I wanted something that I hadn't come across. You know, I thought, like, that would be original. So, it turned out, like, I never seen any Oiler before 91. So, you know, I'll say worldwide, I'll keep it.
Yeah. And they were different letters, for sure. OIL, and even your crew, COI, was different. Those letters were not, like... They were pretty rare. They were not standard type of letters that writers would pick. They'd always pick names with S's, K's, like...
Yeah.
Skesk and Skursk.
As far as trying to, like, develop wild styles with my letters, I still haven't got to that point yet, you know? I never really had the interest, but now I have the interest in, you know, maybe something I'll do in my old age, you know?
The buses, you know, you do your thing with the buses, you get an RTDK, you pretty much, you know, did your thing, got up, got recognized, did that, you knew what that was about. Then, what is it, like 1991, you really start pushing into throw-ups, high spots, landmarks. Talk about the transition to landmarks, which, for the viewer, that means catching either a tag or a throw-up on a spot that's going to run for some time without getting erased or buffed. So they were usually hard to get places, poles, signs, things that you'd have to climb up kind of to access, or just little areas that are highly visible but for managed to stay. And there's some people that had a good eye for it, and there's some people that didn't. So you were pretty successful in that. As a matter of fact, pick still surface of some of your landmarks. Some of them are still running to this day. So let's talk about that game and how you got into that, you know, and how you pushed it, how you thought about that.
As far as spot location, I think that just develops naturally, because you see what you're gonna see around you, just by observing the city. You can't help but naturally gravitate to virgin brick walls, whether they're on the floor or whether they're on a rooftop. Pretty natural to notice pretty quickly what's going to stay up longer if you make the attempt to reach it. You know, when I'd finally met, well, I consider like more or less my first writing partner, Sacred, we'd met in downtown. He's the one actually showing me where Belmont was. And, I spend most of my weekends after finding that spot observing before I like really launched, my name full force, observing for a little while, seeing who's who, who's doing what, learning the game, you know. I thought that was important, you know, because when it comes down to a graffiti name, people don't really think about it, you know. That name is representing you as a human being, as a person, You know, if you're a piece of shit person, every time people see your name up, they're going to see like, hey, there goes that piece of shit. The more up you get, that piece of shit's getting up, you know? So, you know, as far as society, developing a graffiti name, in theory, since you're putting yourself out there, you got to be responsible to be like a good person, right? Other than that, like, what are you representing? So, you know, Spot, once I figured out at Belmont, you know, who was who, met some friends, seen what crews are what, you know, I was motivated to, like, start putting my name up. You know, I wanted, it's a game. And back then, the game was just still developing. Now the game is more or less developed. Anybody can join, you know, who likes, you know, if they have any questions about how to play it, you know, there's opportunities to learn, you know, with like a podcast like this, you know, there's magazines, there's books, you know, that wasn't available for us. You know, I was fortunate that the game was pretty much basically developed by the time I joined. You know, you not so much, unless you look at maybe New York or something, you know, ahead of you, but now the game is there. You know, I had opportunity to, like you said, you know, bring the game up a notch. You know, I wasn't the first, but I hit it hard. You know, me and Sacred still had Virgin Rooftops on Broadway. You know, when we started, I was really excited, you know, to be able to hit those. You know, as far as rooftops, street signs, that was a lot of fun I had, you know, like me and Decline, me and Tulse. Billboards, you know, same thing, same fellas. You know, those were just available all around the city, anywhere you looked, off every freeway. You know, and that hadn't really been massacred by anybody. Maybe, you know, one here and there by other people, but it wasn't really something that they focused on. Freeway bridges, same thing. Like, you know, probably less than a handful of people had ever done that. But when I got into like pushing that, so.
Well,
what did you think when you saw that shit?
Well, from my perspective, bro, I just saw that you were pushing the game by going hard. Like it was motivating because you were out there being consistent, getting up, and then pushing it further than anyone did up until that time. I mean, so like you said, you were doing stuff that had already been invented, but you were just doing more of it, more often, higher spot. It's like the energy level of it went up a whole notch.
Trying to do it well, and then, you know, when more people tuned into that, you know, it started being a competition. Like, shit, I better get off my ass, because, you know what, if I don't get these and things that I've been wanting, someone's going to come do it, you know? Yeah. So it was like, better get on it.
Yeah. The next, put it this way, you made such an impact that the only way to raise the bar beyond what you had done at that, like you maxed that out. So the only way to raise the bar was what like the OZ and Ayer and those guys started doing, which was like colorful pieces. In
yeah,
those
make them more colorful, that they, more intricate.
It pushed them to have to like do something else because that generation, because pretty much for like what your generation was, freeway bombing, signs, heavens and all that, you pretty much had or like conquered that. And so
I think the only thing that was lost though was a lot of the next development stage of all the intricate colors that people were bombing in like those hostile spots was legibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, my shit was simple, but it didn't matter if you were a civilian or a writer. Yeah. You know, you're gonna see my shit and it's gonna slap you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up being so artistic, so artsy that someone who's been in the game for 10 years writing at that point, I couldn't read their shit no more.
Yeah, yeah.
But, because, you know, it is what it is.
Wild styles and crazy, you know, crazy styles, yeah, up on crazy spots. All right, so now 1992, also at this time. So this is, you're elevating the game on that level, but the bus scene is still going crazy. There was a new generation of bus riders that came out, like the CLKs and all,
yeah, your 60 line, man, they killed it.
Yeah, like NTSKC and all them were still going hard, and those, yep, types of crews, CLK. So what had happened is that that's, and also just a lot of tag banging started around that time. Those big bus riding crews started almost taking on like a gang flavor to them. And kind of the scene was taking a step backwards on that scene, the bus riders were, while guys like you were elevating it on the other side. At that time, Cliff Blatchford from Fox News did a real deep, in-depth story on graffiti. And it was like a series that he had done.
Yeah, he had done
It was like once a week when they were coming
He did one that was on tag banging.
Yeah.
And you know what? I really didn't care for that. I thought the way it was done looked bad for our scene. You know, I didn't think they represented it well. It seemed like more like a hostile smash piece, you know, against mm-hmm. graffiti. And I got fortunate just going to like a little backyard boogie house party somewhere, and Cliff Blatchford was there, you know, and the word got around that we're both at that party, and we got invited to go do a special with them, and we took him up on it.
You're looking for the hardest place for the city to reach, so they're not able to buff your name.
You know, but I really wanted to rebut, you know, what he was showing with the tag banging one. Mm-hmm. So he did one that was called Daredevil Taggers, and we took the guy out, you know, did a little bit of what we do.
He was actually there with you guys?
For a segment, not mm-hmm. for the entire thing, you know, but I was actually able to like be interviewed actually on a freeway, you know. I thought, you know, a few of the things I mentioned, you know, were a little bit more like graffiti writer related than any kind of tag bagging related, you know, that there was something else, mm-hmm. you know, but it was kind of lost to me at the time because I seen all these writers that like went into neighborhoods, like I said, in the San Gabriel Valley. And then, I never seen like what the reason was to not gangbang, you know, that's what you want to do, you know, why bring the competitive graffiti game into it? Mm-hmm. You know, if I were to ask you, tell me three tag bangers that you remember as being up. Who you got? You know, seriously. So, you know, it just seems like a whole backward idea. You don't need to tag bag. You know, if you were anywhere in the graffiti world in the early 90s, you know, you didn't need to tag bang, you know, if you wanted to, you know, have issues and shit. You know, there's enough violence out there. Just if you wanted to get up, especially, you're going to encounter plenty of violence, you know. You don't need to, like, look for it. It'll find you.
Want to know something interesting on that topic? In, like, the mid-90s, I ran into a sheriff's publication. It was a book they used to release amongst the sheriffs. I forget exactly what it was called, but in there they had a special article about gangs and the gang mentality in Los Angeles to kind of educate and put the sheriffs up on what was the roots of it. It was really fascinating. It was well done. One of the things just is because like it's almost like a gang expert that his observations on how LA ends up always like. So what he said is they even named the process, called it westernization. That's how they nicknamed it.
Hmm.
And they said, you see, and it's true because you've seen it in the football teams like the Rascals, Wanderers, Rockwood, all them were football teams.
Yeah.
That you've seen there were lowrider car clubs sometimes that went towards gangs. Then there was party crews when there was, you know, the Knock Knock Boys and these boys and Stray Cats and all these other cats that became gangs. Then you even had punk gangs, FFF, Sacred Reich. You had the guys that, like the West Side Posers and gangs that were like in a mod. And they were bangers.
Right.
You know? And they became neighborhoods. And eventually, so they said not only culturally, but like when new nationalities, immigrants come to the town, they get sucked into it. Because, for example, whoever's the newest person, like let's say and they were focusing on like the Vietnamese, because there was a lot of stuff going on at that time with the Vietnamese gangs beefing with the other gangs. And they said that a new culture will come in and their young people will eventually adopt these ways because to defend themselves, like, because they'll start getting kind of picked on by everybody else. So eventually they start saying, well, we're going to have to adopt some of these things to defend ourselves. And eventually they form their little protective little units or little hoods. And as they start going to jail, it's as they start picking up the lingo, the slang, pretty soon they're wearing Pendletons, putting on Lokes. You know, so they call that process. They said it surely happens.
Well, that process made it worldwide at this point. You know, you look at the Philippines or Japan, you know, that I don't know if you want to call it Chicano, you know, estilo. That's popular. That's been popular. That's been popularized all over the place.
American, Chicano, white. I mean, it's prison. You know, that had a lot of, you know, with the clothing, the baggy.
Low riding, you know, hip hop.
That process tends to happen. Anything that's kind of like out there in the streets is always in LA. There's always that risk of that spirit or that vibe coming in and like kind of affecting it. You know, it's a reality that you have to deal with when you're out here. And then later on when I did work with youth and other youth workers, you know, that was kind of something that we were trying to kind of like eventually work with them to kind of steer them away from getting caught up on that vibe, you know. I mean, but even I got caught up in it. I mean, it's just something that happens in LA.
See, that was my whole point, you know. I just didn't see the motivation to saying I'm looking for problems. You didn't have to. Yeah. You know, I'm going to tag bang. You don't have to. Just be in the scene. Problems will find you.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of suckers in the game.
That's it.
You know, and there's people, if you really put yourself out there and get up, you know, what you consider up, people are going to try to get popular off your name. Ride your little piggy bank for their like 2 cents of popularity. Yeah. You know, who hasn't gone over? I'm sure you have. And you're like, the fuck was that fool thinking? You know,
here's the thing a lot of people don't talk about. And I mean, you were in heavily in this mix. And that's like a lot of the kids in LA, to get things they needed or wanted or whatever, they had to rack. And by the time that was around since the early days, boosting paint, you know, clothing, whatever.
That was stuff. Really hard to get used to. And, you know, everyone takes breaks in their career. Mm-hmm. And to go from all the paint was free to now everybody buys it.
Yeah.
That was a real shocker.
Mm-hmm. But during your days, the racking game was off the hinges, bro. It was crazy.
Well, you know, if you consider me as putting a lot of work, you know, with graffiti, aerosol, that paint had to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And never broke my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't really remember ever buying paint. I don't know, maybe a Kills or something if I was on vacation. You know, at some little Mickey Mouse hardware store that you feel bad because it's mom and pop, you know, I'll buy a can. Fuck it. But other than that, you know, even in the LA riots, you know, we might have drove, you know, to a couple of circuit cities, but if there was a track auto next to it, you know, free paint during the riots, you know. And
talk about, where were you at, you know, during the riots?
You know, because of my complexion, I kind of stayed north of the 10 freeway. You know, I was over there in Hollywood, you know, Sunset, around those areas. A little bit into the west side, a little further.
Did it affect over there pretty good?
Oh, it was jumping. You know,
what were some of the things you saw?
Cars driving by with their trunks open and dangling cords. You know, people breaking into the Circuit City on Sunset right there. Radio Shacks. Everyone just didn't seem like anybody like really care much about the, you know, the message of the riot. It was just pure looting, you know, in our area. And, you know, I'd wish I had more experience as being a looter. You know, it was my first time. Upon reflection, you know, we could have, like, been a lot smarter and, you know, came up quite a bit more. But who knows? It's 2024, right? You never know. It's every how many years in L.A.?
Yeah, man. I remember being torn because there was a kid, young or younger man side of, you know, like, it's kind of, it's a free-for-all, like whatever. But at the same time, where I stayed in Linwood, we were cool with, like, we had the businesses there that were moms and pops businesses that we were cool with the owners. They were like our peoples, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, some neighborhoods, so, you no, saw the local residents defending their spots.
No,
you know,
I was throwing rocks at fools and stuff that were trying. You know, I didn't have a strap at the time, but so I was like just getting big rocks and just chucking it at dudes that were like looting the, you know, the this dude Hercules Burgers, this Greek dude, been there for years. They were, you know, busting his windows, getting in there, stealing all the meat and stuff, man. I started throwing rocks at them fools. But you know, that's just because like the passion in me was like more like, this isn't like, this is going beyond, you know what I mean? It's out of hand, and fool, now you messing with like fam, you know what I mean? And so that was my experience. While at the other side, I had homeboys that were pillaging, you know, it was kind of a weird mix to be caught up in, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I always thought there's a difference between racking and robbing, you know, there's no insurance covering like your mom and pops and, you know, small business owner, you know, they're just losing out. There's no insurance, you know, that they're getting rich with, but you know, you're hitting the Track Autos and Chief Autos and Home Depots or whatever, Builders Emporium, you know, they're going to do all right if they're missing a little bit of paint, you know. They have to order an excessive amount of scribers. You know, thrifties, if they just happen to like lose a cologne case here and there, you know, they'll be all right. So, you know, it's like I said, you know, you should have a little bit of principle as a person, you know, especially if you're going to put your name all around the city.
Yeah. But so, yeah. So for the viewers, no doubt, Graf always did not. Now, I'm not talking about the art side, the piecing, but the bombing side always has. Since it's from the streets, there's that criminal element in there. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes dudes partake of it, sometimes they don't. But to find a writer that was able, the bomber guy that was getting up and didn't rack whatever, it was pretty rare. Usually they were more criminalistic dudes.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of a separation, mm-hmm. You know, within the COI crew, I'll bring that one up, you know, my first crew. It was more or less a piecing crew, and I joined that crew kind of coming in with, you know, my little criminal element, you know, the more illegal driven. And I seen a podcast that my friend Man was doing, and you know, he'd be an example. You know, he went to art school, you know, developed his talent. You know, works as an artist these days, you know, makes a good living from it. But I think we went out and painted illegally, you know, not counting yards, but like an actual illegal spot, maybe twice, you know. But there's people that definitely show the difference, you know. You have graffiti writers that are killers. And you have graffiti writers that are, you know, only hipster artists, you know, to put it. And they're all welcome in the scene, but you have a wide variety of individuals in the graffiti scene. You know this. Ooh. You know, you could go on and on for days, you know, but the result of that is you have friends that are gone, you know, and a lot of that's due to that criminal element side. You have friends now that, and you see this, you know, like from the late 80s, early 90s, they caught cases. And it's just now, you know, after 2020, 2024 now, they're just coming out.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of it was, you know, gang violence, but a lot of it was, you know, they were in the graffiti game as well, you know. So you can, there are cases, you know, that people that are in the graffiti game that never been to jail, never caught a case, never had any incidents of violence. But that's not any really other people I hung out with, you know, or that I knew, you know. More power to them. But the graffiti game is a dangerous game, you know. Just, it could be death, could be incarceration. You know, if you made it this far, like you and I, we're extremely lucky.
That brings me to this. After like at about the late 90s, Euler starts kind of disappearing. You know, where was Euler? What was he doing during like the 2000s and some 2010s or whatever?
Well, because of you know, that criminal element we were discussing, you end up with having a lot of contact with the law. You know, I got away with 99.9% of everything I was doing, you know, because that was racking crime all day, writing crime all night, getting loaded and going to the parties, you know, in between, you know, and shit. The only thing that wasn't crime, you know, 24/7 was sleeping and shit. If they knew what I was dreaming about, they'd probably lock me up in an asylum too, you know? So it was 24/7 crime. So getting away with 99.9%, I'd still average 3 or 4 contacts with the law, you know, every year. And they start adding up. And I just got to push to a point where they gave me the joint suspension. And I realized there's no way I can go 3 years without screwing it up, you know, having contacts. So I bounced out to Texas. I had a family member out there. And I completed my joint suspension, you know, and came back to California. You know, there's nothing I liked about Dallas, Texas. You know, I don't recommend it, you know. It's not for me.
All right. You know, one of the unique things that that you experienced was that you were actually dating in the early 90s during your heyday another very active female writer named Tribe. That's what they called her. She was really up. She was bombing hard. And you guys were kind of like the Bonnie and Clyde of that era, bro. Talk about that experience.
Yeah, I give it to it. Like, I considered us the most up couple at that time. You know, she had it over all the other chick writers at that time. For a young man like me, you know, we had the same interests. You know, coming up, getting up. I think at that age, you know, you're not looking for intellectual conversation with your partner, perhaps. You know, I turned on to a lot of game coming up. She was an established writer before I met her. She continued on with that. We just had a lot of fun until it wasn't fun no more. You know, there tends to be drama in young relationships. You know, ours ended when she put a court case on me, called the cops. And, you know, some people, you know, it's up to them if they forgive things like being cheated on or whatever. But for me, once somebody calls the cops on you, that's a one and done. There's no forgiving that. And my whole picture collection thing was probably like, you know, real important to me. She held that hostage for years. And, you know, I more or less forgave her, you know, as time passed, time heals, whatever. And I got her to return all I documented my graffiti like really well and a lot of other people's graffiti is, you know, so I spent all that time at yards. So I had a pretty massive, and you know, plus I racked, so I had a really nice camera for all those years. I had a really nice picture collection. So I was a little traumatized, but I knew like, you know, she had it somewhere and I got it back. And then since I still like had some contacts with the lots here and there, I decided to give that collection at my family's house. And then one day I came out and I was told that collection was gone. And you'd asked if I had like a few things, you know, to bring for the show here. And I brought back all those memories of, what do you mean it's gone? No, it's not. To this day, I have like this much hope that it's still somewhere. And when my stepmother passes, there'll be a little note or something like, yo, here's your shit. Mm. Never know.
I remember though that brings up a memory, and we've talked about this. When you were with Tribe, we were all at a rave, and there was almost a civil war between UTI and STP over some stuff. And I want to talk about this story because there's a G code lesson in this. as far as just having holding your peoples down, I think, and having to make quick calls on like what's right or wrong. You want to tell that story, Heliotrope?
Yeah. Well, me and Tribe had just come back that night from racking. You know, I had a trunk full of those, you know, colognes, and pretty much just heard there's a nice little party at Heliotrope. There'll be a lot of riders present, and there were. Everybody was there, you know, but I just happened to show up with her, and just the two of us. But you were there, a bunch of other UTI brothers, STPs, you know, random riders. But that was those times where they had a thing called the mob mentality. You know what that is, because I've been in the mob mentality too, where you're with your people in a certain inebriated state, you know, and you feel that like all rules and manners or whatever are out the window, you know. We can do what we want, how we want, and, you know, fuck anybody who ain't with it.
Okay, let's pause there so I can shoot you what was happening on the other side of the coin. So that night, there was that party, that rave happening, that we knew the dude who was throwing it. We had pieced up in there. So I think we had called you and invited you. The STPs, I invited them, and which I was like, man, at the time they were really rolling deep and really active and kind of in a so I was hoping to influence them, maybe like to get into some party and open their mind, expand their minds a little bit. But that got shot down real quick, because when they came and picked me up, whatever, because I rolled with them, we stopped by a 7-Eleven to pick up some brews. These fools go in there and just take over the 7-Eleven, bro, start taking just cases of beer. The workers started like tripping on them, and these fools started throwing beers at them. And I mean, just
that was before,
right before that. I'm like, what is going on here? What am I getting into now? We get in the cars, get back. I'm like, man, you fools better start acting right, whatever. And when we get there, we roll up there, and I could tell they're feeling themselves. And it didn't seem like it was that long before they were already getting into trouble. Someone calls me over and said, Skill, like, man, something's going on over here or something. And so now go ahead and now describe whatever it was from your point of view.
Oh, well, you know, I was just there with Tribe. She was dressed like, you know, she ready to do a dance or whatever, you know, her little stilo back there. And just it got disrespectful. You know, I don't know. Some people knew she was, I was with her at the time. Some people might not have known. But it got disrespectful. And
in other words, the fools leaned in on her real heavy. Is that what
you're saying? Yeah, and then you know, so I spoke on it, and then somebody in the group didn't like that I spoke back, because in that mob mentality,
yeah,
you know, nobody cares what's being said. It's just like, oh, you want to challenge the mob? And that was it. So you know, I caught a punch from the back, not even to who I was talking to, and that's where it kicked off. I was like, blood, and that was it. And then
but so that, okay, so I think I remember a scuffle, right? And then what we did is we said, okay, because then it was turned into like, what? So we said, look, make it a fair one. If you got a problem, okay, you know, you disrespected this lady, whatever, he ain't down with it. And so me and Snap and a couple of the other STPs that were the older ones, we said, okay, we're just going to have these dudes run a fade and squash it. So here's the G lesson. Everyone knows from when you grow up in an LA high school or you go to the county or to a prison, that running a fade is a respect, if done right, correctly, it's a respectable way to just get that dudes get stuff off their chest.
To de-escalate, in theory, everybody having to fucking be involved.
It kind of just nips it in the bud and ends it. You know what I mean? And both people usually walk away with respect. Like, okay, you were down for yours, I was down for mine. We agree to disagree.
True.
And we got our shots in, whatever, right?
But, you know, ironically, in that situation, whoever it was that was disrespecting on Tribe wasn't the person that I actually like
had to go heads up
going go heads up with, right?
Well, but it was chaotic. But either way,
I didn't
was,
care.
Yeah,
whatever.
But there was a dude representing, right? And so we all went outside. The circle formed, and bam, what happens next?
The one on one took place. I remember. I think toward the end, I lost balance. I was getting like pinned or something, and I think someone came and kicked me in the head. Well, that wasn't the one-on-one. And then when that transpired, then I just recall everything going off at that point. You know, that was the end of the one-on-one. And it was just, you know, a ruckus. I remember everything from side to side. From behind, someone clipped me with a crowbar or some type of fucking tool. And I was leaking again. And that was a point, you know, the whole time I was carried a knife, you know. And I pulled it after getting hit with that. And then somebody else came, threw a punch at me, and caught the knife. You know, so that's pretty much what ended it. You know, they saw that that arm got opened up, and there's still a cop just sitting there watching this whole thing. And that's more or less, you know, I think Swan was all holding the door, went back in the club, and people like went their merry way, you know, at the end of that night. But, you know, I'd like to thank you. You know, I know you you helped out when like more than that one person like was jumping in. Yous helped, Snap helped. You know, I appreciate that. A few others.
Because that's what I wanted to talk about is because, like, so the lesson here is that, you know, SCPs are like family. They are family, you know, and I came with them. But they are expected to learn and play by those rules just like everyone else is. If we all come to an agreement that, okay, we're going to let these, we're going to watch over, let these two dudes, that's supposed to be like the kind of the authority that, and really, there's supposed to be a mutual unity to create a safe environment for these dudes to handle this and get it done. And it turned into a civil war where, like, my brother is torn up, like, Jonas, what are you doing? Like, it sucked to see my own family. We're on opposite sides scrapping, and everyone's throwing down, and it spills over into the street.
Yeah, but you know what? I got to give credit where credit's due. You know, you saw something that was unfair, and you know, you try to balance the odds. You know,
yeah. And then I remember like feeling the residue of like, oh crap! Now, like, what's going to happen now? If these dudes keep, because they're knuckleheads and they're really active right now. We're older guys that are more into piecing and stuff. We're not trying to get drawn into nothing, especially with our own people. So we knew that couldn't go on. And after a few days, I think, you know, eventually it went, you know, it got.
Well, actually, like, there were some people that stayed mad because of the guy that cut himself. So, you know, I think for a few months after that, you know, when I'd be hanging out in the valley or, you know, I'd go somewhere like with Tulsa or something. And he'd warn me, he'd be like, yo, some of those fellas are coming down right now, you know, fucking. You know, I was packing back then, you know, just for my safety. And, you know, I didn't want no incident. I didn't want to take that any further. You know, I ended up, you know, that whole thing got squashed with time as well. You know, I never, you know, I think the guy that got cut, I think I was with him in the county jail after that. We actually, like, were in a riot together, if I remember correctly. You know, that all got squashed, you know, funny story at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, and then the older you get, you learn. Obviously, you know, hopefully grow out of all that stuff. And I mean, I've learned that, you know, at the end of the day, it like true G code and true manhood and true everything is to de-escalate things and to create a peaceful environment wherever you're at. You know, that's harder to do. It's the easy thing to be a knucklehead. It's the easy thing to escalate things.
Yeah.
That doesn't take any thought, brain power, courage, or nothing. It's to de-escalate.
But also, though, you know, if you're gonna have a real beef, you know, like, have it for a good reason. Have it for a real reason, you know? Have it behind something. Yeah. You know, that's, you know, like I said, there's all this, in the graffiti game, you're going to have stupid people fuck with your shit, you know, and that just gets old. It gets tiring. You know, you talk about back in the days with the high spots. Yeah, it was fun hitting those spots until you got to go back for the second time, the third time to the same fucking spot. And then it becomes a fucking, it's not a, those are two or three times that you could have hit new spots. You know, it's redundant. And, you know, what do you do? Just let people cap your shit? No.
No.
But, yeah. You know, when, like, what happened to me, eventually graffiti, by like 94, graffiti started feeling like a job. Mm. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going because I have to, because other people are fucking with my shit. You know, so, Yeah.
Word. Well, okay, so let's talk about any words of wisdom, last words, maybe anything you want to. Okay, you know, actually, this is something that I really want to pick your brain on, is being a guy who played at such a high level in this game back then, and now you're watching the way things have changed in the city. LA is bombed way more than ever. What do you think has to do with that? That has to do with, and what do you see are the differences between the writers now and then?
I don't know. We could start with enforcement. You know, right now, with the way Los Angeles as a city is being treated, as far as the beautification of LA, you see it's, you know, filled with trash and tents, and you know, it's, the city's being disregarded. So along with that, it doesn't seem like they're too concerned with enforcing any of the old graffiti enforcement. You know, I haven't heard about people's houses getting raided for graffiti lately. I could be wrong. Maybe I just haven't heard. And when I'm driving around at night, I encounter people like just spray painting with a camera and their girlfriend with them, and like not a care in the world.
It's like a free-for-all now?
Yeah, like a free-for-all. You know, I just imagine that, you know what, it wasn't like that. And there's a good possibility that it won't be like that again. You know, it just takes a different perspective. Who knows, maybe the Olympics are coming up in, the couple years or whenever. People's attitudes change. Yeah. So right now, graffiti got trendy and, or, you know, more mainstream. But all it takes is a few changing perspectives, you know, from some people with power. And could go back to the days of 4 a.m, your door gets kicked in and there's a task force. You know, it doesn't take much when they have a motivation. You know, oh, all of a sudden, tagging on this brick wall costs $10,000 to clean. You know, that's so a double felony.
Are you saying then that if, so these cats are kind of getting away with some stuff they, in other words, if the atmosphere was the way it was then, it would have weeded probably a lot of these cats out, and there wouldn't be as many that were, LA wouldn't be as killed.
Well, that too, and it's not early 90s gangbanging either.
Yeah.
You know, you know, we talked about that tag banging, but, you know, aside from that, the gangs were active.
They were holding down their territory.
I've been on the freeway shot at a number of times. Yep. You know, I was on Broadway shot at, you know. I've donated paint, you know, like to a couple of neighborhoods, you know. You don't hear too much, so-and-so, you know, I remember some of those specials too, where like a couple writers that got killed in gang violence from Chris Blatchford, you know?
Yeah.
Those things have all mellowed out. And, you know, people getting raided, you know, that's mellowed out. You know, who's to say they'll get tired of the homeless, they'll get tired of graffiti at some point, you know? I'm thinking the Olympics might be a kicker for that.
So when giving props out, would you say that you take those things into consideration? You know what I'm saying? When you're like, if the person did it and they're not having to face a lot of the same obstacles?
Well, not really, because it's, you know, the current writers, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, it's their benefit. You know, mm-hmm. It's not enforced as much. The gangbangs died down. You know, a lot of the opportunities that writers at my time had to, like, you know, we talked about earlier as well, you know, bring things higher, you know, do things that are a little more challenging. It's all been done before, you know, and you got to be kind of creative now, you know, to do something to separate yourself from the rest, you know,
right.
But at the same time, there's a lot less competition, mm. You know, it's, you could really go out in LA for 1 week. And if you paint the entire night, you could be the most up in the city in one night, you know, maybe I take that back. Maybe you can't do as much like roller painting or, you know, in 1 week, but you know, it's not that challenging, you know, anymore, because you know, heavens aren't being hit, bridges aren't really being hit, you know, it's rooftops, roller action, which is, you know, fine and dandy, you know, more power to like whatever's going on during your era, you know?
Yeah. Well, yep. Every era has its challenges. And yeah, I think one of the ones of this era is, like you said, that the bars have been pushed up to do something new. They have to really get creative.
You know, because, you know, I'm like, okay, if I'd been privileged to be around in the 80s, you know, late 80s, why climb a bunch of shit when the stuff right here in front of you is staying up? You know, fuck.
Well,
seems unnecessary.
Dudes are doing that para bungee, whatever, where they're doing vertical stuff down the buildings. That based on the Brazil, huh? Brazil started doing that, and then now they brought.
See, it's interesting you bring that up, and we were just talking about enforcement. You know, I've been seeing that. You know, but if you're gonna hit a skyscraper, a glass skyscraper, and do that the mountain climbing hanging type thing, I'd be pretty nervous about at about between 3 and 5 in the morning, wherever the hell I'm living at. Because I wouldn't imagine that somebody's not going to be pretty vindictive, you know, about that going down on a skyscraper. You know, I just think whoever, you know, I know whoever, but I just hope they're taking the precautions, you know, wherever they rest.
Well, you know, and to be fair, man, word has come, and I've seen some of the pictures where, like, dudes are renting the lifts to do that stuff, like on the more cleaner, nicer stuff.
Well, I'm not saying this shit's on Instagram,
but the stuff that's hanging is kind of more, is you could tell because it's a little like rougher, like, you know, it's, they're not as comfortable, you know, but some of the stuff that's really nice, I think they actually rent the lifts and whatnot.
No, I'm just saying, as far as you're saying, they get permission from the like building
no,
owner.
No, I think they don't. But what I'm saying is that
I wouldn't imagine anybody
they
would
get over.
For that.
I think maybe looking like workers.
Well, I wasn't just saying I don't. It'd
know.
Be easy to do. I'm just saying it's what's not easy is hiding from the consequences if somebody really wants to push the issue and you.
Oh, yeah.
And just the cost involved of what they can claim it costs to clean something like that. You know, imagine you get hit with that restitution.
Yeah. No, that's hard.
You know, I got pretty fortunate when I got hit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I said, 4 a.m, your door opens, you're like, sleep, like, what the fuck? But they'll try. They'll try super hard to get you for every single type of crime they can imagine, you know, out of being vindictive, you know?
A lot of people don't talk about that, the consequences and the suffering that goes. It's a risk you take. It's an insanity because at the end of the day, you're not making money doing it. And for that credibility, fame, expression, whatever you want to call it, and this is on the bombing level, I'm not talking about the art or the piecing, usually there's some very rough consequences. Let's talk about some of the stuff
you've
suffered.
Yeah, they'll come at you. They'll come at
you. Also, just the suffering that you've been through because of it. Like, how has your life gotten harder just from direct consequences, bro?
Well, you know, from graffiti, I've done minimal jail time for that. You know, they tried to charge me with the whole package, but I was more or less as prepared as you could be. So their case more depended on telling on myself. But, you know, I was fortunate because I'd hung around with, like, older individuals, you know, who laced me up a little bit with the game, you know, what to do and when it comes to, like, dealing with the police. You know, and the simplest rules, you know, talk to your lawyer, don't talk to the police. And they will come. Is the weaker their case is the stronger they'll come at you and play all the little games, you know, to yourself, back for a detective interview, to yourself, back to the interview. Here's pictures of all this stuff. You know, you're stupid. You know, we're going to charge you with this, that, and fucking Kennedy's assassination, you know, fucking. And, you know, lack of sleep, all the fucking pressure and threats. You'll actually sit there and be wondering, man, like, what is the right move to make? And you know what? If you can't figure it out, great. Make no move at all. Talk to your lawyer. Don't talk to the police. And, you know, I stuck to my guns, fortunately. And there was a lot of pressure. You know, I was, what, like fucking 18, 19 or something? You know, but I was fortunate. You know, I stuck to my guns. And then they come at you with the final one. So we're going to put you in front of a jury. We're going to take your case, you know, to the whitest part of the valley. and they're going to decide if you, within reason, did all this we're accusing you of or not. And then you think to yourself, And then you more or less, you have to like make your decision. You know, do you want to test the waters right there? Or do you want to come up with a deal, you know, that you can accept? Because I played the game as the best I can, I was able to take a deal that I could accept, which didn't include a felony graffiti, which didn't include restitution. And my advice to others would, when these Olympics come, and if they, you ever get up to a point where you think the law enforcement would be vindictive, or if they, you believe that you're causing others to do more graffiti and they look at you as a role model, just be prepared. Mm-hmm. Don't leave like all the physical evidence of everything you did in your, the place you lay your head. But at, you know, also with the media, the way it is these days, social media, everybody just seems to disregard, you know, caution, you know, remembering that it only takes the wind to change for all that evidence to be used against you. So, you know, I wish everybody good luck as far as the social media stuff goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Including this, yeah, you know, yeah. You know, but I never did the crime that I couldn't do the time. You know, that's why I retired from doing a lot of stupid shit.
Yeah.
You know, I like to enjoy these years of my life, you know, and be a father, you know, enjoy my wife, you know.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of my prayers is that, you know, in these podcasts, I mean, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly. We look at it all for what it is. But being older, we could look at it from the bigger picture and take and learn from things and, you know, and then make a judgment call with all of the information. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, we're not pushing any particular thing on anybody. All we're doing is just, hey, from the horse's mouth, this is what they live. This is the story. This is what they've been through. And then, you know, you take it from there, you know?
Yeah.
So I think with that, why don't we go ahead and give some shout outs, bro, to some people that meant something to you, bro, or mean something to you in your life.
Okay. We didn't talk too much about Cruz.
The LODs. Let's talk about the LODs just a little bit before as part of the shout outs.
Gotta give a shout out to, well, you know how this is, you know, you're mm-hmm. gonna leave people out that, you know, don't pop into mind, but with the LODs, give a couple shout-outs to the Lost Ones, you know, to a good friend of mine, Lest, from LOD, real trooper.
Military veteran, right?
Yeah, you know, he used to do the Heavens, you know, when they were still, like, starting Heaven days. Good dude. You know, he was one of those people, like, you meet them in a strange way, you know, we're like, we saw this Ranger Rick's, you know, that we used to party at. And he was defending some women's honor, you know, because one passed out when we were doing like nitrous balloons or something. And it's like, oil, what are you doing? You know, and, you know, it's like, don't be fucking with these girls, you know. And after that, we met like in that conflict and then we ended up being like best friends, you know, and got him into my electric union. And he had ended up with cancer, lost a leg, still kept working. And so overall, like, fucking, you know, great person, you know. I think about him fucking still daily. You know, these two up there, Lest, Skate, you know, I had the privilege of meeting him, you know, in those years. You know, we used to drink for, like, 40s at Barnesdale when I had the opportunity to meet him, you know. Fucking, that was a big loss, you know. I was in Supermax, you know, when I heard that news. When Some fools, they were clowning, you know, some stupid tagger got hit by a fucking train and da da da. And I'm like, the fuck? And yeah, it turned out being him, man. Fucking shed tears for that. Ended up meeting his father another time in county jail and kind of took his dad under my wing, you know, and he was a cool cat. That was random.
Remember when we ran into each other in the county?
Yeah. Yeah, I do, man. ran into a lot of people on all those trips, man. Fuck. Toltz, man. Give a shout out remembering Toltz, you know. And that was a big loss. I happened to be out of state, you know, when that transpired, and that was bad news.
You guys had rolled hard, huh?
Yeah, you know, like, I got to give him the credit, you know. From who I've come across and, like, what I've seen, what I've tried to, you know, accomplish myself, he was the most prolific writer, you know, in any individual part of the city, you know. I might have spread myself out a little further, but, like, for the San Fernando Valley, you never seen any part of the city just controlled and devastated that much, you know, by one writer. You know, and as far as racking goes, you know, I give myself a little prize for being pretty well. You know, I supported myself for half a decade, you know, off racking. But the only person I seen my equal was him as well. You know, Tulsa, he excelled in everything he did. And homeboy Sleaze, you know, he was pretty much like my main mentor. You know, Sacred showed me a lot of the game. The first, like, real writer, I was a writing partner, but Sleaze, me and him had a lot more in common. So, you know, he was a mentor that meant a lot to me. And I'd been to a lot of funerals, you know, through the years. But, you know, I had a small family. You know, I never really had much loss other than my pops. But Sleaze hurt a lot. You know, me and him were in close contact because of our medical issues. You know, right before he passed, and it was unexpected, and that one was a bad one. But yeah, I give props to all my youngster homies. You know, the ones that are putting it down right now. You know, no names there, but you know how you are. You know, get some props out there. The young OTR youngsters, the current LODs, a couple close UTI homies. You know, they know who they are. All my BLA homies out there still putting it down. Fucking the old COI kids, you know, from the KNB COIs that got back together that are doing podcasts now. I remember you old fucks, you know. Yeah, if anything comes up, I'll drop it in there.
Right on. Okay, my brother. Well,
oh, you know what? Hey, give props out there to Mike Queen. Her CDP homies have been showing me a lot of hospitality lately.
Cool.
Peace to all you brothers.
All right. City, Sector, CDP, Gun.
That's right.
Moz, Havoc. I want to say some shout outs to Danny Cuvo. Congratulations on baby Danny. You know, love you. Can't wait to get up there and hang out with you. And I want to say shout outs to Julian Beichmann. He's a collector that's collected my work in Switzerland, man. Awesome dude. Thank you, B-Boy Jay. Be looking out for them stickers I'm going to be sending you. Shout out to JB, Switzerland in the house. All right, my brother. So any last words?
Nah, I think we had a pretty good face-to-face. Cool. Appreciate the invite. You know, thanks a lot.
All right, my
appreciate
brother.
Your friendship through the years, man.
Yes, sir. Likewise, brother. God bless. We out. Classic Burners.
Because time is our most precious resource, always remember that every minute, every second, and every moment matters. So let's do our best to live a kind, compassionate, and loving life. God willing, we'll see you in the next episode. One.
Taking the atmosphere as I steer this vessel like a Chevrolet Cavalier. I'm a native to this culture, chasing vultures up out of here. Fuck out of here, a lot of work put in like Vladimir. We dismissing fear. Listen here, if your loyalty shifts over cloud to the point where you disappeared and disappear, you overlooked.
Those who wrote the book, how does that work? How you a factor when there's gaps in your chapters? Let's cancel the chatter off the grid. Damage your scanner. Shed some light in this tavern and hold this mic just like a lantern. I don't settle for the standard or nestle in the pasture. Turn a happy camper into a snack for a pack of panthers. My pops would often reminisce on the mothership landing and then become saddened at how the brothers disbanded over money mismanaged and traditions abandoned.